From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, an update of news and events from Central and South America and the Caribbean with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, reporting to us from Managua, Nicaragua.
Yeah, the most important news over the last couple of days has been the incredible result in Venezuela from the point of view of the government and the governing United Socialist Party of Venezuela. Although the results are obviously an overwhelming victory, and they won 300 out of what was it, over 300, of something like 330 municipalities in those municipal elections, including 23 of the 24 state capitals. I think that's, is that the right number?
Yeah,
it's
that's
either
right.
22 or 23.
Yeah, it was a remarkable victory, yeah.
Yeah, and also in the rerun of the election for the governorship of the state of Zulia, which was the governor who was elected for the opposition back in whenever it was October, was that when the elections were October? I think it was October. Refused to recognise the authority of the National Constituent Assembly, and so the National Electoral Authority called for a new election in the state of Zulia, which was won by the government candidate, the PSUV candidate. So that means that, and I think the government now have, what was it, 18 or 19 of the governorships, and now they've got over 300 of the municipalities.
Yeah, they have 308 out of 335 municipalities.
So that's, you know, that's in terms of having an advantage in terms, an administrative advantage, and to setting up a base for next year's presidential elections, assuming that the government is able to manage the continuing economic crisis in a way that gives people more confidence and security in their basic economic well-being.
Yeah.
It looks as though President Maduro is likely to be able to get re-elected, because unless the Venezuelan opposition really pull themselves together over the next 12 months, and they have nothing to offer voters in Venezuela. One of the things about these municipal elections is that Luis Almagro, the completely discredited Secretary General of the Organization of American States, called on the opposition parties not to take part in the municipal elections. And he's also been trying to stop them from, or urge them to not take part in the dialogue, the negotiations with the government that have been taking place in the Dominican Republic over the last few weeks. And I think there's another bout of those negotiations scheduled for December the 15th. But the opposition can't even agree on that. They can't agree whether they're participating in the dialogue or not.
Yeah.
They can't agree whether they should follow Almagro's advice or not. Now, and the Justice First and the Popular Will opposition parties and the Democratic Action Party. Democratic Action Party did relatively well in the elections for the governorships, but they decided not to participate in the municipal elections, which is very strange. Anyway, and they, because their tactic appeared to be to differentiate themselves from the more extreme elements in Venezuela's opposition so as to get some kind of political advantage going into 2018 and heading for the national presidential elections at the end of 2018. And then they changed their policy and decided not to participate in the municipal elections. That's the Democratic Action Party now. And the fact that the opposition, the main opposition parties, decided not to participate in those municipal elections obviously had some kind of very serious effect in terms of the results. But even if they had participated, they are likely to have suffered a similarly demoralizing defeat to the defeat that they suffered with the elections in the governorships in back in October.
Yeah, it looks like the numbers actually look almost identical. You had about a 47% turnout this time, 9 and change million voters, and, you know, an overwhelming majority of them voting for PSUV. And so if you had the other, you know, say 40% who would show up for an 85% turnout or whatever, you would have had a majority that still went for the government, and a significant one, something that would most likely mirror what happened in the gubernatorial, you know, elections and the governor
exactly. And that confirms what you and I have been reckoning over the last few months in every one of these electoral exercises, that the real support of the Venezuelan opposition is between 4 and 5 million, and that's their ceiling.
That's right. And there's something else, too, that's, you know, going forward, this is going to be very important. Winning the municipal elections like this, and as it turns out, as we said, they end up with better than 300 out of 330, or more than 90% of the municipalities are going to be under their control. The problem with the economy has been the distribution network, which has been in the hands of the domestic bourgeoisie, who have been using it to thwart distribution of goods. And decision to put the distribution in the hands of the government, local governments, essentially, because this is a local enterprise that you'd be talking about in terms of distribution outlets and warehousing and local transportation, means if all of these local governments are in the hands of PSUV, the opportunity for wrecking is going to be completely, you know, mitigated. And so going forward, it appears that they're poised, you know, PSOV is poised very well to, you know, solve the problem that they've had with the with economic disruption.
Yeah, and as I said earlier, it gives them a huge practical administrative advantage.
Yep.
So then, and then when you can, and the other thing about those elections is that they had foreign election observers from various organizations, the main one being the Committee of Latin American Electoral Experts, which is a very prestigious electoral observation body in Latin America, with people from across the political spectrum. And they certified the results as being very free and fair. And then, so if you take that into account and look at the overall situation in Venezuela and compare it to what has happened in Honduras over the last couple of weeks, the comparison is extremely negative for the regional right wing and for the Honduran government in particular, and for its masters, its puppet masters in the United States, in the White House,
right,
and in the State Department.
Yeah, or in Langley or wherever.
Yeah, so what's happened in Honduras is that, as our listeners probably know very well, the elections were held on whenever it was, November the 26th, and the initial results gave a very clear lead, a decisive lead, and what one of the electoral tribunal magistrates described as an irreversible lead to the progressive candidate Salvador Nasralla. And then mysteriously there was this long hiatus in the count, and when it restarted, all the votes started favoring the government the sitting president, who was standing for re-election, Juan Orlando Hernandez, to the point where he eventually overtook the progressive candidate Nasralla, and subsequently massive protests in the street, an extraordinary police strike, supposedly because they didn't want to repress the people, but I was always very skeptical of that claim. And now they seem to be back to business as usual. And there have been many deaths. I've seen reports of 17 deaths and hundreds of injured over the last couple of weeks as a result of government repression against peaceful demonstrators protesting the electoral fraud. And even the European Union and even the Organization of American States election observers have said that the elections themselves took place in an atmosphere of great tranquility and civic spirit. But the count has been a complete betrayal of the trust that Honduran people put in their electoral authority. And so the election observers agreed a special count, an escrutinio especial, they called it, which finished over, I think, over last weekend, and just confirmed the result. And of course, the special count, the special scrutiny of the votes, was as vitiated as the original count. And there were no corrective measures to make good the failings in the count originally held by the Honduran Electoral Authority. And it remains to be seen what the OAS and European Union observers will say, because they seem to be the ones that have most prestige. But what they should have done from the start is say, this count is hopelessly flawed and vitiated. We need new elections. That's what they should have said from the start. Let's see what they eventually end up saying. But I suspect that the crisis will be allowed to drag out. And this is how things are done in Honduras and have been done in the past. In the 2005 elections, in which Mel Zelaya ended up after an incredibly convoluted set of negotiations and miscounts and all kinds of shenanigans, Mel Zelaya came out as the successful candidate in those 2005 elections. And I expect a similar process to take place now. They're not going to respect the will of the Honduran people. And are the Honduran opposition capable of mobilizing sufficient support over sufficient time to defeat government repression? Well, if you look at what happened after the 2009 coup, they tried really hard and they were just repressed consistently for months. And I don't see any sign on the part of the Honduran authorities or the United States supporters, government supporters, the Trump administration and his State Department, that they are inclined to do anything different this time. I mean, they're likely to support in a low-key way Juan Orlando Hernandez's fraudulent electoral win. And I am not optimistic about a significant change in the current situation.
Yeah, they had, they're in the streets still. There was massive protests just yesterday. It appears that the people are not buying this theft. And so I don't know where it's going to end up, but it appears that there's going to be some sort of a confrontation over this, and it's not settled yet.
No, not at all. It's not settled, but it's likely to just be allowed to drag on, with the opposition holding demonstrations and rightly claiming fraud, and the electoral authority just digging in its heels and saying, well, we've done a recount, and they'll do another recount, and they'll get the same result. Until the election observers, and which I don't think is going to happen, until the international election observers in the European Union and the Organization of American States say this is a farce, the electoral count was completely corrupt and vitiated and fraudulent, we need new elections with a completely different count system. And until they do that, it's just going to drag on, and it'll be just like 2009, with lots of suffering on the part of opposition supporters, lots of frustration for opposition supporters, and the government's just going to sit it out.
Yeah.
So, and if you compare that with the situation in Venezuela, I mean, where are all these claims of democracy and support for electoral fairness? and electoral integrity. Where are all these people who've been so critical of the Venezuelan system, which has shown itself to be incomparably superior to the corrupt system in a U.S. government client like Honduras?
Or in the United States, for that matter.
Oh, right, sure. I mean, we probably shouldn't go there because it's such a complicated and very clear condemnation also of the United States electoral system. But right. And so that's that for people in Latin America. Let's go back to the question that we've discussed a couple of times. Why is this election so important? Why do people care? And I continue to believe that the reason that the United States is likely to continue to support Juan Orlando Hernández is because they can't afford to lose Honduras in the Organization of American States or at a continental level as a voice on their side condemning Venezuela. And it's absolutely crucial for them that Honduras does not become led by a progressive government that is likely, if not to support Venezuela, at least to abstain from votes against it. You know, and that to me seems to be the fundamental reason why the United States government is being so supportive, and it has been supportive, of Juan Orlando Hernández.
Yeah, I don't even know where to begin with this. You've got so many moving parts. One of the reasons that the election in Venezuela is so important, of course, is we've been looking at Venezuela as being sort of a linchpin of a lot of the activity in Latin America that's tended towards consolidation of economic, cultural, political alliances, certainly, unity in support of the right of self-determination of the region, sort of an integration of the economic, including even contradictory political forces based on the strength of the economic relations that were developing. And that in turn, is the environment from which comes Brazil, arguably the largest economy, certainly the most populous country in Latin America, which is one of the BRICS, which is a part of this global movement towards right. exactly those same things. And so, kicking out Venezuela as one of the legs of this in Latin America is, also kicking out one of the legs globally. Honduras is, an important key part of that exact movement in Central America, and which is one of, you have Central America, South America, and the Caribbean, essentially. Yeah. And doing the same, it certainly interdicts the possibility of constructing such an alliance from, say, the Rio Grande all the way through the rest of the hemisphere.
It's absolutely crucial around. For yep. the United States to keep control of the Honduran government.
And then there's the huge military base, of course.
Yeah, of course. The big military base. But another aspect of that, perhaps someone might describe it as the converse of that, is that what's happening in Honduras is a very serious image setback for the right wing, because countries like Colombia, Mexico, Peru, Argentina, the current usurper right-wing government in Brazil, they've all ganged up on Venezuela, attacking it on the grounds that it's anti-democratic, that the Maduro government is in effect a dictatorship, and so on and so on. The recent elections in Venezuela, contrasted with what has happened in Honduras, gives the lie to that completely and makes it very difficult for people to come out with similar claims, after the events in Honduras and the way the Organization of American States has been completely discredited in terms of, if you look at it in realistic terms. And the Organization of American States behaving in Honduras has been pathetic. And that has effects on the morale of the right wing. I mean, they they may be able to hold on to Honduras over the next few weeks by hook or by crook, but they know they've suffered a serious electoral defeat.
Right, by crook most likely. And the question that it, you know, obviously provokes is, so how's that conservative restoration going for you?
Well, yeah, sure. And that was always absurd. So with the electoral context in the region dominated by what's happening in Honduras and this tremendous result for President Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela, the next electoral exercise will be in Chile, when right-wing candidate Sebastián Piñera has a runoff against the progressive candidate Alejandro Guillier, and although the polls are giving apparently, and insofar as one can believe the polls at all, the polls in Chile give Piñera a slight lead. I suspect that he's going to lose, and everything depends on two things: how high the turnout is. A low turnout will favour Piñera. If there's a high turnout, and if the left-wing Frente Amplio voters turn out en masse for Guillier, he'll win. You know, it's as simple as that. And so we'll just have to wait and see what happens. Now, I'm not a great fan of Alejandro Guillier, but I think it's important, very important to note that the Frente Amplio leader, Beatriz Sánchez, has said that she's going to vote for Guillier. And they've left it to open to they're not making any recommendation to the Frente Amplio supporters which way they should vote. They're saying that they should vote according to their conscience. And that's in effect that's saying, you know, vote for Guillier because otherwise Piñera will get in. I suspect that Piñera will lose, and perhaps by a lot. But so much depends on the turnout. And that's a very big deal in a regional point of view, because although Guillier is unlikely to make a very strong break with the policies of his predecessor Michel Bachelet, at least he'll be under pressure from the Frente Amplio supporters to perhaps not support Venezuela, but at least abstain. So that too is going to be very important at a continental Latin American Caribbean level, in terms of future diplomacy, the kind of diplomatic battle between the progressive forces and the reactionary forces, because up until now Michelle Bachelet has been abject in the way that she's strung along with the more extreme right-wing forces in the region. And so we'll see what happens on the 19th. And so shifting from Chile to Argentina, you can see how desperate the right wing is, because there are all kinds of moving parts. And what's happening in Argentina now is that
treason. They're accusing her of treason, and they're trying to stick that Nisman mess on her and that bombing back in the 90s.
Yeah, and so I don't know if you've got time to
yeah, let's develop quickly. It a little bit. Yeah.
AMIA, it was a Jewish or Argentinian organization. I think it was a mutual insurance building. The AMIA building was blown up in 1994. Nobody was ever identified as the perpetrators of that horrible terrorist attack. And I can't remember I think several tens of people died, and there were many dozens injured, as I recall. But that attack has been manipulated by the right wing ever since. And so what the Nestor Kirchner and Cristina Kirchner did during their periods of government was to try and investigate it without being misled or forced off track by United States government pressure or by pressure from the government of Israel. And they were pressing at different times. It's like all of these terrorist incidents that are exploited by the United States government and its allies. At different times, they target different people. So one minute the candidate is X and the next minute the candidate is Y. And depending on what the geopolitical imperatives of the moment may happen to be. And the same thing happened with this Amir building terrorist attack, until eventually, and the United States tried to pin it on Hezbollah and Iran. And the administrations, the Argentinian government administrations under Nestor Kirchner and under Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, tried to follow up that investigation. They tried to have meetings with Iran to discuss, you know, what is Iran's point of view of those events. And just for wanting to discuss with Iran, just for wanting to open up a diplomatic channel to Iran, the right wing and the regional right wing, the United States government, attacked Nestor Kirchner and Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner.
Right.
Because they needed to pin that as a terrorist attack, to be able to say that Hezbollah is a terrorist organization and that Iran supports international terrorism. And the Argentinian government's decisions to negotiate and talk directly to Iran made nonsense of that, because they were able to demonstrate that the Iranians had nothing to do with it. And so then, among all the convoluted conspiratorial actions from the Argentinian right wing that were conspiring to try and make Nestor Kirchner and Cristina Kirchner look bad, among all that, they instigated a special prosecutor, this guy Nisman, who died in very mysterious circumstances, apparently by suicide. But the Argentinian right wing, led by Mauricio Macri, are trying to suggest that somehow that Nisman was murdered, and that somehow Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner and her political party and her government were involved in that. So it's really dirty manipulation of judicial, administrative, political processes in Argentina, with a very clear political motivation, and an extremely dishonest and dirty motivation designed to, as in everything they do in relation to Cristina Fernandez, designed to smear her, to make her unelectable in any future presidential elections.
Yep.
Now, they failed. They failed in to prevent Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner getting elected to the Senate in the recent legislative elections. And that seems to have been the trigger for this latest development, which itself has been made to look completely stupid by the former head of Interpol, who explains that the Argentinian government at no point tried to interfere in Interpol's handling of potential accusations related to the Amir terrorist bombing.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, unfortunately old hat for the U.S., including people should keep in mind the fact that Iran was the only country successfully sued so far in the 9/11 attacks on the United States, because a case was brought against them and they did not recognize the validity of it, so they didn't appear. There was a default judgment in the amount of billions of dollars taken against Iran, which had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11. Tony, we got to stop here, and we thank you very much for your time, as usual.
Okay, thanks a million, Don. Look forward to talking to you again. Yeah. Let's see how things go in Chile on Sunday.
Absolutely. Yep. Okay.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.